Dominic, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Nice stuff.
Good, buddy.
Nice.
Looking good.
Thanks.
Who else is here? Who else is here? Guys, if you can, have those screens on if you can. I'd like to have a really good conversation tonight with it a couple of minutes here. A small group tonight, or seven people. It's okay. We'll wait for a couple minutes. Anybody on the call right now? Any wins? How's the week been going so far?
My week's going good. I'm still hitting under 160 right now pounds, so
Good
that
for
seems
you,
like,
man. Where'd you start
yeah.
again?
I started with Gavin at 247.
That's insane. Good for you. How do you feel?
I feel better. I feel a lot. Nice stuff. It's like
Define better.
reminiscing. Yeah. Reminiscing of me in high school. I was like a 120. So
Right.
it's kind of like getting there, but right now it's more muscle. No. Compared to me being scrawny.
How's
So
your
it's,
energy? Energy
yeah, my energy's good. My energy's good. And that stuff, yeah. Yeah. That stuff. And it's, I think my mental health is a lot better too. That stuff. So, yeah.
Awesome, man. It's great. Good for you. Anybody else? Keith, I always talk to you kind of in passing. How's training going for you, brother?
Good, Steve. Andrew's got me on a bit of a reduced program still with the shoulder at the moment. So, working through that, working on the mobility, which is something I never put great credence in years ago, but that's a huge difference. So yeah, strength's good. Sleep's on the way back. Shoulder's still bad, but yeah, working through the recovery on that now. So yeah, doing good, man. Loving it and just waiting on the countdown for it to flick over and for Andrew to give me the green light to start going a bit heavier again. So. Feeling
So
good though.
what happened, Keith?
Just long-term injuries, just left it. I did it a long time doing flies years ago, went back too far like 20 years ago, and then
Yeah.
recurring sporting injuries and all those kind of things. And then it's diagnosed as bursitis, but yeah, I reckons it's just, adjusting and trying to maintain and hold when it's been off for so long. And then I just let it go for about 12 months as we do. And it reached a point where it was stopping my sleep and all those kind of things. So, yeah, just getting it back in shape. And Andrew's been very good on holding me back. I'm kind of champing at the bit to get back into the big stuff, but not allowed yet. But it's good.
It's okay, man. You know what? Like I've been listening to a lot of podcasts, which has kind of inspired tonight's call. And I've been listening to a lot of different people who are just experts in their field. And one of the conversations that they were talking about was that it was unrelated, right? But they were saying about when they have athletes come into their program, what kind of athlete would they rather have? Would they rather have an athlete that's like all guts and glory but has horrible form, or the opposite, right? Somebody has perfect form but doesn't want to be there. What would you rather have as an athlete, right? It's kind of a funny little corner. And like the guy was saying, like, I'd rather have somebody who wants to be there but doesn't know how to work out. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. I don't care about form if you don't want to be there. Like I really don't, because like you're not going to see results. Like absolutely not. And it's kind of like one of the things I would want to talk about tonight, which is really cool, since that's almost like a nerdy segment of mine. Jimmy, I just saw you there, buddy. How you doing? Things I'm good.
All good, man.
All
Oh,
good.
my camera. Yeah. Multitask, cooking, and watching you guys.
How's the energy?
Pretty good. We'll see how tomorrow.
Yeah.
Since today was my 30 grams of carb
Yeah, lovely, eh? How are you getting through the
day.
bird row workouts? They hang you hanging in there?
Today was fun.
Good. That's what I want.
Did you get my check-in today?
Yeah, man. I've
I
been
sent you
prepping
some
this
photos.
call. Yeah. I
I
can't wait
bet.
to look at it. I've been stuck at my computer doing this. Just prepping for this and then tending to some family stuff. So that's my next agenda item for me. But
Nice.
you're feeling good? It's moving well.
Pretty good, yeah. I got deadlifts tomorrow, so we'll see how I'm gonna try to get a lot of sleep tonight.
Man. Good. Okay, guys, just one item I wanted to talk to you all about. So on the site, I'm pretty sure you probably all got an email. Marbella, the link for the next camp has been released for week one. Week two will be coming soon, I'm pretty sure. I'm not entirely sure how it works in terms of how that stuff happens. I'm sure you guys will get like the links from the guys in the back end, MI. But just wanted to let you guys know if you have interest, we'd like you to go over the head over the link. And just to get your names in there. Again, I'm not sure how it works. I'm sure it's something like an email, and then you sort of express interest. That way, you're on a waiting list, and then you'll get notified further when the whole camp becomes available. But if it is something you want to take advantage of, I can personally tell you like the first one is absolutely crazy. Like what was really cool was it changed the perception of a lot of my clients' mindsets. And although none of them right now, at least I'm seeing, I'm kind of cycling through as I talk to you. None of them are on this call. But were they? Let me just look one more time. Yeah, I'm not seeing anybody. But if you talk to anybody who went to the camp, it was just insane. And again, it's very similar to what I want to talk to you about today. And any of my clients who are going to hear this call, you're going to be, pretty familiar with this rant. But it's something that, again, I get to nerd out about, which is pretty cool. But before I do, is there any what anybody who'd like to pop on and share a personal win this week? Because it's always nice to hear that. And guys, if you can, pop your video on just so I can talk to you, so I can see you. I always like making these conversations more a conversation rather than me just, dictating or lecturing, because this stuff interests me. And I assume you guys are all here because you're meatheads too, right? And you like to learn about this kind of stuff and talk about it. And lifting things and putting them back down is a personal hobby of yours. And you like to talk about it because we're a bunch of, grown up goons. So, any personal wins? Nothing from last week, guys. Go for Russell.
Yeah, I don't know how much of a win we'd call it, but just from curveball ignoring, sorry, just from curveballs and trials and tribulations, I got knocked off course a little bit, wasn't able to get my workouts, and just this week, getting back into a regular routine and realizing how vital it is to my bioforce, life energy, identity, just feeling good to get back on track with the workouts. That's to me, even though that's the bare minimum expected, it's a huge win right now.
That's awesome, man. You know what's crazy? Like I've had that a couple of times. Anybody who has had kids, you guys, I'm sure a lot of you guys have kids, right? You notice that like you can be on with your own personal game and then you get sick, and then it's like all those little action items that you were adhering to so well just fall off because you're like puking. And you're like, how do I do these things? Like you're just, oh, I'm a shell of who I was. So it almost becomes a little daunting to try to get back on the horse, right? Not that you can't, but it's like, how did I have this amount of things that I was doing? And it was with ease, right? So you know what? Sometimes we accept these wins because we deadlift 700 pounds. Sometimes a win is more like I got through it and I conquered the day. And I think it's just about mental rigidity sometimes too, right? And there's so many different things that cultivate like that end game. And that end game perspective is kind of what I want to talk about today too. So if there's nobody else who wants to pop open, and again, guys, just please mics off if you want to, when you want to talk, just talk over me and I'll shut up. Because like I said, it's kind of something I'm just going to rant about. So the thing that I wanted to kind of talk to you guys about today was something we're actually spending a lot of time in our coach's corner about, which is like understanding what the real intent behind exercise is. And that is like when we're in the gym, right? We're in there to create stimulating reps. Like I assume everybody here is, we're all talking because we want to grow muscles, right? Like that's why we're here. A bunch of nods. We want to grow big muscles. Big biceps are kind of cool, right? We like that. So that happens through creating stimulating reps, right? So, just think about this. A lot of this is going to be more like just stuff I want you to kind of picture in your head so you can understand the philosophy behind it. If you go in, if you can curl 35 pounds, but you grab the 5 pound dumbbell and just do 10 reps, is that going to grow your biceps? No, it's not doing anything, right? If you can curl 30 reps and you grab the 20, is that going to grow your biceps? No. Right. So like you have to create some kind of stimulus. And that is kind of a nuanced conversation, but it isn't actually when you get down to it, because this is what we've been hearing forever. It's like, the old 80s and the whole, no pain, no gain, all guts and glory. But the nuance is in the details. It's not necessarily in just like these catchphrases. But it's kind of funny. This is where I get to nerd out, which is the conversation gets really deep in terms of like, what are we actually talking about when we're trying to create simulating reps? So before we get into that, there's almost like a pre-conversation I guess want you to have with yourself is like, do you have the capacity for hypertrophy? And I think that that's something a lot of people forego. They don't even think about it, especially considering we have YouTube, we have all these different mediums that we get our information from. And you go on YouTube, and so many people will hear a guy like John Meadows, and if Gavin hears this call, he'll laugh because I've been talking about that a lot. But they'll hear their favorite influencer saying like, "Oh, if you do this exercise, you'll grow." And it's like, well, maybe, right? But maybe also not. Maybe what will happen is nothing, right? Because it's not just about the exercise. Like, you can't just go in there and just grow. It's about stimulus, right? And this is one of the reasons as well why people in the first 3 months of their work, their training journey, why everybody sees results, because you've taken your body from a point when you had previously zero stimulus, like zero, because you weren't doing anything, right? And then you do everything. You go into a whole hour of training every single day. So of course you're going to adapt. You don't know where, because you don't know, your skill level is massively low, right? Everybody knows what skill and exercise that means, hopefully by now, right? So meaning like your ability to create an adaptational response in the muscle you're shooting for is very, very low. You don't even know what you're doing. You're just kind of picking things up. And that's great. That's fun. Sometimes I almost wish we can go back there. But at the same time, you're going to get a result just because you're just picking stuff up and putting it down. You're like, yeah, and that's a shock to your system. And your body's going to adapt based on the forces you're applying to it that it were never applied to it before. Does that make sense so far, guys? Right? But then what happens is 3 months in, what happens? It's almost like you hit a brick wall. And everybody's like, what's happened? Right? It's great for us because that's how we work, right? We get to help people. And that's what I always loved, especially when I worked at the gym, because it's kind of funny. A lot of people, when I used to run the gym here in Moncton, they would ask us like, is January like the rush hour time? Is that the busy time for us? And it's like, no, it was always March. It was always March. And it's like, people would be like, well, why March? Like, because the people who thought they could do it realized they can't. Right? Because they'd come in and they'd have the 2 months and like, why am I beating my head against the wall? And then they'd sign up. January, I always actually found was incredibly slow for personal training, but it was always high for membership sales. Incredibly high for membership because people want to buy a membership to go to the gym, right? So, anyways, that's a different conversation. But the thing is that like when we're trying to create this adaptation beyond that first 3 months, which, and that's important to note because sometimes people are like, well, I got this before I did these things. It's like, yeah, but that's because you had no stimulus. There was nothing in your body creating it, and then you had something. So what are the things we're trying to do to be able to have the, I guess, I'll use this phrase like stacking our deck. What are we trying to do? We're trying to stack our deck so that we can create hypertrophy, right? And so what would these things be? Form, right? That can have a kind of like a side note, meaning like, do we know the why behind the movement? Are there ugly reps? Are every single rep the same, right? Then on top of that too, is the rep that you're trying to create a response with, is it actually even hitting the muscle? Are we doing the thing we think we're trying to do, or do we not even know? Sorry about the coughing, guys. I'm still getting over this cold. So a good go for it, buddy. You something, Russell? No, you're okay.
No. I'm just saying, me too. I'm just getting over this while I'm muted because I've got the same cough.
Yeah, it sucks because it feels like glue. But sorry, guys, my voice too. My voice is probably super sexy right now. But yeah, so when it comes down to like understanding that, it's like, what's the why? I get this question a lot, and my client Nate, when he hears this, he'll laugh because I'll use it as an example. But it's a good question because I get it often. People will say, "You guys ever heard the question where people are like, well, when is it okay to kind of get a little sloppy in your form? Is it okay to do that? Kind of like let form go and just kind of get more reps, just because I can?" And it's like, well, it depends, right? The question is like, what do you mean by sloppy? Like, what does that mean? Because somebody's like, what somebody might be sloppy is like losing tempo. And like, if you still have control, maybe you might be over enforcing a slow concentric, and I'll get in that later. But if by losing form, you mean that you're not able to do the job, then no, you can't lose form, right? That's like saying, I'm doing a curl, but I feel it in my neck. Can I keep going? It's like, that's retarded. Why are we talking about that? No, you're done. Like, you can't, it's for the biceps. We know that, right? But then it's a little bit more gray in compound motions, right? Because people will, like, let's just say they stopped using their quads in a squat a long time ago, and the squat started turning into more of a good morning. Well, like, is that okay? Well, it depends what you're trying to do. Are you just trying to get it up? Are you just trying to get the weight up? Well, yes. Well, then the question is like, maybe because you're a power lifter, I can't really argue that. Your coach might have a reason for it. I don't know. But for me, it's like, we're going to do certain motions for a specific reason, right? So if you know that a certain motion, like let's say a front squat, limiting factor will be the loading, like in terms of it being loaded on your front. So you're probably going to have a limiting factor in your upper back, right? So when that starts failing, yeah, you're just, that's done, right? You can't get past that. So we'd have to look at form as like something that's going to cut your ability to then get any more stimulating reps. The next one, and kind of the same thing, would be stability, right? So as an example, you're doing a barbell bent over row and your lower back starts rounding, right? So can you keep going? For multiple reasons, no. For one reason you might not be thinking of, though, is because of the origin of muscles, right? You've heard Ben talk about this a lot. We got two ends. We got an insertion and origin, right? So where do the lats insert, right? Up here, right? Where do they originate? Lumbar spine pelvis. So if your lumbar spine pelvis are unstable, can you keep going? No, you're done. Because you don't have tension in that muscle anymore, right? You've lost it. Same kind of thing. We've all been to a gym. We've all seen that guy who does curls like this and the whole shoulder moves, right? So, you know, one of the biceps originates and it actually passes the shoulder. So that means that if that's happening, is that bicep stable? No, it's gone. There's no tension going through it. So should we continue the set? No, you're done, right? So that would be like a good thing to think about. Do you have stability in the origin joint? Do you have stability in the joints you're trying to work, right? Or even if you look at it like a squat, like the pelvis. Squat, good way to think about it, is vertical translation of the pelvis. That just means moving down. Pelvis goes down, not back, not up, not forward. Doesn't go multi-directional, just moves down, right? So if we can do that, pretty good. But if you're experiencing discomfort or you're having problems with the pelvis, a lot of the muscles, again, insert around the pelvis that we're trying to utilize in the squat, like the quads. That pelvis is like all wonky. You're going to get an inverse or maybe an unpredictable tension alignment with the quads versus the hamstrings versus the adductors versus the glutes. And you're going to get these weird muscles. And that's why people start feeling it in the inner hips. I'm sure you guys, somebody in the call, if not somebody directly, has either known somebody or has themselves hurt their adductor in a squat, right? Like the inside of their groin, right? It happens all the time. People do it because they have an unstable pelvis. So these things all matter, right? Stability, mobility. What about that in terms of not necessarily flexibility? People don't know the difference, but like, yeah. You got it, Russell. So like, what about like mobility in terms of like the ability to gain access to ranges so that you can train the muscle, right? Like, would it be ever a no-brainer or not a no-brainer rather that if I want to work my bicep, I need to extend it? Is that, that's never not simple, right? We know that. So why is that ever not simple with other muscles? And I think the only answer is because people don't know. But they just don't know like what is a stretched quad? What is a lengthened quad? People are like, oh, I don't know. Okay, that's okay. That's why we're here, right? But what would be like a lengthened pec? Maybe they don't know also. What's a lengthened rhomboid? Start going through these muscles and people don't know the answers, right? So it's like, okay, so do we have the ability to get in positions? And if we don't, then it's absolutely imperative that we gain that ability, that capacity. Because if we don't ever get it, then we're never going to be able to get in the position to work the muscle. You guys with me so far? I've given you a lot of word vomit so far. If anybody wants to interrupt me and say, hey, slow the hell down, I'm not getting this. Or if you just give me a bunch of thumbs up and I'll keep ranting. Thumbs up around. We got it. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Good. Richard, you're with us, buddy. Love it. Yeah. So again, mobility. It's a big thing too, because like mobility matters, because when it comes down to mobility, if you look at the mobility of like a deadlift, a lot of people, when they have the improper mobility of a deadlift, they like a deadlift is essentially this motion. We're trying to use a thoracic spine to extend, our lats are engaged to stabilize. And then we're thinking, can I get into deep hip flexion? Can I move my knee? Can I get this compound motion requires a bunch of different joint angles to function properly so that I can lift this weight off the ground. Right. And the biggest one is usually hip flexion that limits people. Meaning like, can you bring your knee to your chest? Can you do that? Right. But can you do that down there trying to lift 300 pounds? Right. And then people are like, and then what happens? The lower back will round if you can't. Right. So if the lower back rounds and somebody else isn't moving, like you're not lengthening your glute. Right. If you're not lengthening your glute, you're not using them. So you can see how that, if we don't take care of that, you're never using your glute in a deadlift. Right. And then what happens is you start using this strategy of using other muscles in motions. And that's why people won't get stimulating reps. So the whole pink picture I'm trying to point you guys towards seeing is that if we're trying to think we want hypertrophy, like the big muscles, we have to take care of these things, because if we don't take care of these things, then that we're not even allowed to go here yet, right? It's like the apprentice in a mechanic shop who wants to do the work, but every single time he does, he ends up spilling the grease everywhere, And the guy's like, you're not ready. You're just an idiot. And it's like, yeah, okay. And he's like, he's really hyper. He wants to do it, right? So same thing. Another thing, exercise selection. This one's huge. People don't talk about this enough. If you have the wrong exercise selection, you're not going to win no matter what. You guys ever seen somebody with long femurs try to squat high bar? You ever seen that? They're just going to bend over. It's going to happen. They won't not be able to bend over. They're going to bend over. And you'll know, you can just nod to yourself and be like, oh, that's right. You'll know because you'll either feel good in a squat and be like, wow, I like squatting, or you won't. And you'll just naturally just kind of like that motion. For me, squatting high bar has always been really, really hard because I have long legs. I'm that, yeah, right. Yeah, no, Gabe, you are. And that's the thing. Like, you will literally be limited by your long femurs. But here's the catch. Here's the really cool thing. Gabe, because of his long femurs, will always have a great deadlift and he'll build big butt. Because that long femur also will make him bend over more in his deadlift. So a deadlift is a great back builder for Gabe because it's going to point his muscles in relation to the tension formed in a deadlift, which is meaning off the ground, his back is bent over, it's lifting it, right? Whereas a person with short femurs is going to love a squat, but they're going to hate being in a deadlift. Does that make sense, guys? Follow me so far, right? So exercise selection is huge. Another thing people don't talk about, aerobic threshold, right? Why does that matter? Because recovery is aerobic, right? We can't build muscle if we can't recover from the stimulus we're trying to provide to the muscles. Does that make sense, guys? There's other reasons why we push zone two. It's actually kind of funny. When I first, I shouldn't say first, but you know, through the time that I've had some quandaries with people in their acceptance of zone two, let's say, right? And I think it's because people have built this thought in their head with cardio being a weight loss modality or mechanism, right? Would you guys agree that that's like kind of this thought in the world? People think that cardio is for weight loss, right? It's not. I think it can be a tool to get results, but it's more so in that regards, just something to kind of gain consistency. Jimmy, are you jumping in twice here, buddy? Are you double Jimmying?
I'm going to jump off my phone again. Like a laptop.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to enter the twilight zone here. You got it, buddy. Double Jimmy. So like when it comes down to that, like, yeah, like it's really kind of an important thing. And the reason why it's going to help your energy systems, right? And that's a massive thing. Oh, are we entering? What do you got here? Get rid of that audio. We're entering double Jimmy. There we go. Okay. Now another thing, mental toughness. Do you guys ever have a workout partner that ruined your workout? Please nod yes. I know that you have, right? Because they just didn't want to go there. And you try to spot them and they just give up immediately. Spencer, you look like that kind of guy. You look like that kind of guy that would have the bad workout partner because I'm pretty sure you go insane in your workouts.
I haven't had many partners in my life, but workout partners. But me and this guy used to do this. We did the squat every day program.
Yeah.
For like 90 days, where every day was squat day. It was legs every day, and he was pretty solid. He could actually keep
up. Yeah, he kept up
hard, but. Yeah, but that was the only one I've ever had. Other than that, I'm always just training my friends. You know, I'm always the trainer. I'm always the one pushing them.
That's yeah, it's a curse, man. Like when you start assuming this role, it gets to be assumed actually with everybody, right? Like same thing with me. I'll have some clients. I have one client to work with for a little while, and I'll do sessions, but I'll also train with her because she works hard, and so we'll push each other. But even then, like you know, some people, not her, but like we've all had that workout partner where like we're trying to push them, they just don't give it, right? And so this actually brings us to another point, which is that when we've taken care of these bottlenecks, one of the most important things you can realize is that your ability to create stimulating reps is actually voluntary. Like it has to be realized once we've created an environment where we have the capacity to do so, meaning you have good form, you have good skill, you have good mobility, you have good stability. Like there's nothing limiting you that we just talked about, right, guys? Then it becomes voluntary. And I'll use this analogy or metaphor, whatever you want to call it. Like when you put your gas down in a car, right? What happens? The engine gets loud, gets hot, right? That's what happens. You're not going to do that and be like, oh, shut up. You don't do that. It's a byproduct of putting the gas down. Guess what? Every single time you get into leg extension and you push until failure, it's going to suck. But it doesn't have to suck in terms of like, oh, I don't want to be here. It can be like, oh, there you are. I was waiting for this to happen. Now is my time, right? Because when you actually recognize that suck feeling, then you're like, this is what I'm here for. That has to be the only thought you're thinking in your mind. This is what I'm here for. How many can I do now? Right? Like we've all heard them say it. Like Bruce Lee, for example, said that he didn't count his sit-ups until they started burning. You guys ever heard that? Yeah. We've all heard people say this, like the whole Arnold no pain, no gain. Whoever has the best Arnold impression, please unmute yourself and do it. But like, that's the whole point, is we know this stuff. So it's kind of funny that the science, this is why I get nerded out by this, because the science is actually coming back and now proving what people have been saying for a long time. And what's really cool is it gets actually even more intuitive and more almost like deliberate, in the sense that we've come to a place now where they're actually starting to find out that the comfort zone in terms of muscular growth, it's actually very substantiated. Like we can actually kind of prove it exists, right? And so this is a cool thing. You guys with me so far, by the way? You're still with me? No, no questions? We're good, yeah? Okay, so when it comes down to like creating stimulating reps, what we have to essentially do is we have to get in a place where we're activating high threshold motor units, okay? So we got low threshold, we got high threshold. Low threshold are going to activate, you know, very, very minimal muscle fibers. High thresholds activate a lot, right? So if you're to try to hypertrophy, which one would you rather hypertrophy? The lot, right? The bigger majority of muscle fibers. That's going to give you your best bang for the buck. You with me so far? So if we're doing that, we have to get past the low threshold, right? And when we do that, it's like we're crossing over what we've currently been capable of doing. And when I heard that and started looking into this and started getting the research behind it, I thought that was the coolest thing. Because basically what that means is it's like, hey, you're comfortable here. If you want to activate these guys, you got to go past that. And it's like, that is so cool that the human body is physically set up for that. And I think it's an absolute survival mechanism. This is just me just talking. Now me just spitballing philosophy on bro science, but I think it's cool because if you look at the human body as a strategy of energy conservation, right? Because a long time ago, if you had to leave the cave and go hunt, what would happen? You have to risk getting eaten by the tiger, right? You don't want to do that. You want to stay in the cave, you know, preserve energy. It's much better like that. So then if you think about how it would work, like when you actually start digging into high threshold motor units. What does it feel like, guys, when you go to failure, true failure? Is it fun? Are you smiling? It's like, probably not when you actually go to true failure. You're going to be on the ground breathless and your muscles don't work. And if anything, they're cramping and you can't move for a couple minutes, right? So when we do that, what are we essentially doing? We're creating a shitload of fatigue, okay? Is that advantageous? Yeah, the mental satisfaction, 100% it is, but like the physical sensation that you're stuck in for the time being. And again, the amount of physical, literal fatigue that you've built up is insane. So that is something that I think is actually a strategy that your body is putting in place saying, hey, you can do this, just stay here. Don't go over here because we're going to create a lot of fatigue. And if you do that, right, what happens? And inversely, I think it's actually kind of cool too, because in order to imagine if that was swapped, imagine if you activated the high threshold units right away, you'd be running from a tiger and your body would get exhausted like that. And then you'd just die and it would eat you, right? Because it gets really exhausting to activate these guys. So the whole point is that it's voluntary process, right? So like, how do we know? How do we know if we're doing this? And this is kind of a conversation or concept rather, but it's about understanding that like, when we're in the set, there's a feeling, there's bar speed slowdown. And again, this is all predicated on the fact that everything else that we've taken care of or talked about is already kind of in the background. You have a high skill, you're not deviating reps. Imagine you're in a pendulum squat, right? Or imagine you're in a hack squat. You ever seen somebody go to failure in the thing? Like the bar speed or the speed of exercise, the contractile speed slows down, right? You guys have seen that? It actually slows down and you can see it. That's why it's a voluntary thing. Do you want to keep going, right? So again, when we're creating stimulating reps, how do we know? We've created a lot of fatigue. You shouldn't be able to reproduce the effort, and that's a big thing. So this is kind of cool. If you guys have bad muscles, you think are just, I can't get this muscle to grow. Just hands up if you do. If you want to talk about it, feel free to unmute yourself. But yeah, hands up. You'll have at least one stubborn muscle that doesn't like to grow. Yeah, we all have that. So you might notice that when you're trying to work that muscle, if coach says do 3 sets of 8 to 12, you would routinely fail at the same number over and over again. And you're like, what? I just failed at 10. I waited 60 seconds and I still hit 10. And it's like you can't get past it, right? And that's again a low ability to contract muscle fibers. Like there's an inability there. There's probably one of where to revisit the beginning of this conversation. There's probably one of those things, form, stability, mobility, exercise selection. Something is limiting your ability to be effective in contracting muscle fibers there. So we probably want to revisit that. But that's something that's really, really important because then if you were to go to a muscle that you all think that maybe responds really well, let's just say it's your chest. You get awesome results in your chest. If you were to go to failure on a bench press or something like that, can you reproduce the effort 60 seconds or 2 minutes later? Probably not. You're probably like, my reps are going to drop. I hit 12 first set, second set's like seven, right? And then third set's like five. And so you guys have followed bodybuilders. You're here with the Ben Pakulski Muscle Intelligence Group. You guys probably know Dorian Yates is, right? So what was he a big advocate of? High intensity training. What was high intensity training essentially saying, right? One set, balls to the wall, right? You warm up enough to refresh these movement patterns and just get your body acclimated to swing, right? Get some weight on your muscles. And then you go to it and you go to failure and you don't stop. You don't count reps. You just go. Like you count reps for the sake of making progress so you can track it the next week, but you go like somebody's got a gun to your head saying, do another rep. Can you do another rep? Can you do another rep? That's the answer, right? So I've had clients do reps and I didn't see any bar speed slow down, didn't see anything and that was their last rep. I'm like, you're telling me if somebody came in and walked in and put a gun to your head, you couldn't have hit another rep? They're like, well, yeah. I'm like, then why didn't you? Why didn't you do another rep? Do it. It sounds crazy, but like, there's been a lot of times I've been in my garage and like working out at my house. I've been under a barbell, and when I'm like, can I do another rep? I'll literally just put myself down in it, and I'll think about my kid running underneath my barbell. And every single time, I've gotten up. Because do you think I would let that fall down? Absolutely not. So you have to think about it. If you guys know powerlifting, Eddie Hall had to go through severe, like really, really intense, like psychological programming techniques to understand how to put a psychological space in this mindset that he would be able to actually deadlift 1,104 pounds. Because when he broke the record for 500 kilos, right? He admitted he'd never done anything over 1,000. I think it was 1,000 or 950. He'd never been able to publicly do it in competition, never. And then he had to put himself in this space where he actually could do this. And it wasn't physical capacity. He's like, I cannot get this. He knew it was this. So he had to go in months and months and months. And when you do it, you can see, go watch, after this is done, go watch that. Go watch Eddie Hall's world record 500 kilo. And what you'll see is when he's warming up, there's a flinch moment in his eyes where he leaves that he's not there anymore. You can see it because he literally turns it on and his eyes go to this place where it's almost like he's scared. It's really weird. And then he pills it and he starts nosebleeding. It's pretty cool. But yeah, like the mental space people get to. So I'm not saying I want you guys to go to a crazy place and have nosebleeds, but I'm saying when it comes down to it, yeah, exactly. Well, he's Edmund. In all fairness, like Eddie's nosebleed, he basically he's always gushing blood when he's lifting. But yeah, that's the nosebleed lift. He picks up and he's like, it's crazy. You've seen that. I know you've seen that. I'm gonna pause there before I go on, you guys. Questions, please. Give me a second to talk and drink this while you guys ask some questions.
You just remind me of a video on Instagram. The guy was lifting, and his buddy came out with lighters under his elbows. I was like,
Right?
"Yeah,
Yeah, because there's
yeah."
always more, and people don't realize it. I remember I saw my friend. This isn't a cool thing, by the way. I don't want you to do this, obviously, but like it was a legitimate thing. I saw my friend. He bulged a disc in the middle of his squat. You could see it. It was really gross. Not a cool thing to see, right? But he was squatting 550, went down, came back up halfway through. You literally see him go like that, and just his whole body just does this. And it's like it was the grossest thing because if you've been on a barbell and you have even had an injury in sport, you know what it feels like to hurt yourself, and you're like, oh. And then what happened? Do you think the bar speed slowed down or do you think he went up faster than anything? That bar got racked so fast. He was slowing down too. He was like, oh, and then went, and the second it happened, it went shot right up. Because his body turned on things that he had access to that he wasn't previously able to access, right? And this is what we talk about. Like there's actually an inability to access this stuff without, being in the right state. And his body definitely he probably got more adrenaline than he wanted, right? He was probably feeling the effects of that after. But yeah, go ahead, buddy.
What position would it be difficult to do that, no matter how much?
What do you mean? Say it again. Try to rephrase that.
So I was doing some squats and that stuff, and I was going to a rep, and I was like at the very top of the squat. I was like, I feel like I'm gonna fall on this, and so I racked it and that stuff. Would that, if I went through that motion, would I be able to lift it all the way up still? Because
I
that's
think it's a hard question to answer without obviously seeing, right? But I think that comes back to one of the first things I said, which is like when people have the right exercise selection, the right capacity, mobility, and all of these prerequisites that form the correct environment to create hypertrophy, there shouldn't be a doubt. Does that make sense? There
okay.
shouldn't be a doubt because you're confident or not in your contraction. And that's why you've heard Ben talk about how, like, if you can, you must, and then you'll know based on speed. What I've often found is the people that have the hardest time understanding of how to contract muscles, their reps all look weird. Like, just every rep is different. And they all are weirdly slow and fast. I mean, like, it's like fast, then it slows down, then fast again. It's like nothing's predictable. And then what happens is they'll ask questions like, well, should I feel it here, here, or here? Can I go here? Can I? And it's like, well, that should be kind of like, it's almost like, imagine if I asked you that question with a leg extension. If you were to extend your quad, all you're doing is extending your quad, right? So should it slow down, then speed up, then slow down? It's like, no, it's just a, you're just extending your knee, right? But when it comes to compound, since you're dealing with multi-joint function, there's probably something limiting you, right? That's preventing your ability to feel stable enough to push through another rep, and then therefore leading you to ask this question, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I
So
got
Dom, specifically on, in regards to that, because this is kind of interesting. If you were in something like a leg press, would you ever feel like you don't know if you could push another rep, or would you know?
a leg press. I know on
You
that
know,
stuff. I
right?
know that stuff. It's like right there. But I think for me, because it's like I'm carrying a bar on my body and knowing the weight, I'm not sure if what's gonna if I'm gonna collapse, basically, and
It's
that stuff.
probably lack of something to do with the exercise. So probably a lack of mobility, lack of skill in the exercise, because that matters. And that's the point I was going to discuss with this as well. Like, meaning that, like, just because you put metal on your neck does not mean your quads are going to grow. It's not how they work, right? And people over glorify this kind of stuff. And there's a time to do squats if you want to squat. But the thing is that we need to let go of like certain pre what's the word? Almost like, what would be the word? Dogmatic views, right? Maybe that'd be a good phrase, or like taboo, or what's the word, guys? Give me the word I'm looking for. Like basically something that would dictate how we look. Yeah, there you go. Preconceptions. You got it. Like about fitness, because people think certain things do certain things. Because and the intention of thinking is right. Meaning like you look at Tom Platz, you're like he had big quads, he squatted. I need big quads. I'll squat. But you're not thinking about the thing. You're seeing something, but you're not seeing. You ever heard that? You're seeing the squat, but what you're not seeing is he's closing his knee. But that's what he's doing that's making his quads grow. It's like, oh, okay. So he had short femurs, so the squat was a great implementation so that he could close his knee. But if you look at your motions, are you closing your knees in a squat? Do you guys know what that means to close your knee? Like put your finger behind your knee and just close it. And so when you do that in a motion, if you lunge, when you get into a lunge, are you touching your hamstring to your calf? Or is that open? Because if it's open, you're probably not working your quads as much as you could be. You need to close the knee, right? No different than you need to close the elbow to get the bicep, right? You need to open and close that. It's just a bunch of joints, right? So our inability to do that is going to create a lack of muscular development. And then especially in compound motions, other muscles will therefore start developing at a different rate. Those other muscles not working in terms of co the joint control will not develop. And then you'll feel confidence with one position, but not the next. And you'll go down and be like, I can't do any more weight beyond this. You with me? Right? So if we're talking about the squat directly, it's like ankles, knees, hips, thoracic spine, right? Shoulders, all these things all the way up from the ground. And if we lack ability to control one of those joints, you're gonna see it. Okay. So I would say just revisit it and look at that. Go to a goblet squat and see if you can literally just sit down and touch your butt to your ankles without rounding your lower back.
I think because the squat, the one I'm doing is a quarter up squat, so all the way down, quarter up, then all the way up, and so that's the reason why it's so it's different because of the extra quarter I'm added to that rep.
So Gavin, he's probably doing that to tax that range, so you're gaining more control over it.
So
Exactly, man. Yeah, he knows his stuff. You just trust the process with that for sure. But yeah, that's probably the reason, though, right? So like, yeah, excuse me, guys. So when we're trying to do this, we've created a log fatigue. We shouldn't be able to reproduce the effort. So if we're activating high threshold motor units, we're looking to advantage them if we want to grow. And we want to make sure we understand that we're creating a lot of fatigue. So this is why we revisit that point about like cardio. Zone two cardio is extremely well for obviously producing that ability to recover, right? How many times we talk about recovery? All the time, right? Recovery is the biggest thing, because once we've solved the one variable in the gym, which is, have you created the stimulus? We need to know, can we recover from the stimulus we've actually created, right? So some things to consider, guys. Just made some notes. So if you see my eyes kind of jumping up, if we want to have access to the high threshold motor units, we literally need to go beyond the comfort zones in training. Okay. So how do we do this? And this is kind of funny, because it doesn't mean all guts and glory. It doesn't mean like if you see you swearing and spitting everywhere. What it actually means is track progression. Okay. Track progression. So how do we do that? Under the same context, we either add more weight, add more reps, change tempo, or manipulate some parameter of the exercise, but not too many that it changes the actual context. Does that make sense? So meaning like, it wouldn't necessarily be progress if we took Dom and said, hey Dom, you're doing a goblet squat with 20 pounds for 10 reps. Now do a goblet squat and a half for 20 pounds and 20 pounds and 10 reps. That's not really a progression. That's an alteration, which is also useful for different things, but it's not a progression. A progression has to be underneath the same context. Okay. So it's like, I leg pressed 800 pounds last month. I could do it for 10. This month I could do it for 20. That's progress, right? Does that make sense? I can curl now the 40s for 10 reps, whereas before I could only curl the 40s for 5 reps. That'd be progress. And then furthermore, are we moving the shoulder more during it? Nope, I'm using a preacher bench. Oh, okay, perfect. So you're limited, right? You've actually created an excess amount of stability so you can output more. Therefore, you've actually limited any other movement that at the joints would be taking away stress from the muscle. So that'd be really good, right? So we must lift progressively and under the same circumstances so an adaptation can occur. Within the session itself, when it gets hard, note that it's absolutely, and that's what I was saying earlier, it's absolutely a decision to dig deep and to train harder and not stay the same. This will dictate how many stimulating reps you get. This is an interesting one, because I think this is a, people just need to know this without getting too, you know, there's no women on the call right now, so I can kind of talk like this. I always feel bad though. My wife deals with, she, this is not how I'm talking, deals with, she coaches women. So she coaches women, and the stories that I hear are just always so hard, because it's a completely different mental framing, right? Like you tell a woman how to go, you go say, go work hard. And they'll be like, you don't know my day. It was really hard. I had a really hard time at work. Right. And so you can't really talk to them about working hard, because they're, you know, sometimes in their head emotionally about that. And that's going to like influence their relative intensity or perceived exertion. But when it comes into muscular hypertrophy, it's like, did you exhaust the muscle? That's all we care about. Did you exhaust the muscle? So when it comes down to like, did you go further? Then sometimes we need to understand, if we didn't progress, then we are just working on fitness. And I think this matters, because if you're just working on fitness, what are we doing? That's great. Nothing wrong with fitness, but this is when Ben talks as well about understanding we're here to literally just be like, you know, stimulate reps. Let's go build some muscle. If you're not doing that, then you're doing fitness. That's great. But that's just like, again, enhancing your aerobic systems. You're getting some blood flowing. It's cool. But understanding the difference is crucial. Go for it, Russell.
Yeah, Steve, to that point of you know, you really want to hit failure, is that going to be on every set? And for example, if the workout written, if the coach writes in 10 to 12 reps, and like, shit, I'm at 12, but I got more in the tank. Just keep blasting through it until you got nothing left.
Want to do that every set? Yeah, dude, I love that. That's a good question. So the question, here's the catch. So depends, this is a, you know, it's always depends, right? It depends on the exercise, because if you have like a exercise like a leg press, where the weight, if you can load those things, excuse me, up to like 1,000 pounds, right? So could you find the perfect weight to do 12 reps? Probably not. What is it, like 993.63 pounds? Like, who the hell knows? With a back squat, I can probably tell you exactly, literally down to the percentage, what you can lift. Like Gabe's on this call. Gabe knows his 1 rep max front squat, and he knows his 3 rep max front squat. Jimmy, you probably also do, right? These are motions that you know because you spend time in them. But what's your perfect, Jimmy, what's the perfect amount of weight you need for 40 reps of lunges? Right? It's like, I don't know. Depends on whether or not I'm sadistic today or not. Like, it depends on whether or not like I've had a hamburger. I don't know. Like, there's too many things that come into the equation, right? So to answer the question, it's always better to push if you're in a working set. So if you're at 12 and you can hit 14, go to 14. And then what I would say the next set is add some weight. And then if you come up at 11, that's okay. Nothing's wrong with that, right? And this leads me to the next point I was going to talk about, which is when it comes down to actually like accessing these, we must lift progressively. We must like actually push through those hard reps, right? But what happens when we activate high threshold motor units? I kind of touched on this early. We accumulate a whole bunch of fatigue, okay? So you shouldn't be able to reproduce the effort if you're doing that. You shouldn't be able to, right? So if we're not doing that, we're kind of just creating this other level of fatigue that is going to prevent you from reaching high threshold motor units. Does that make sense, guys? Okay, so we want to fatigue the motor units, those muscles. We don't want to fatigue you, because that will create a false perception of, again, the stress that's going to accumulate in the session and be like, oh, I can't do it anymore. Kind of like if you were saying, if Russell, you're my client, and you said, hey, I want to back squat. I want to get really good at back squatting. And then I put that after like a whole leg session, 2 hours in, I'm like, okay, now I get to back squat. You're focused. There's no way you're going to learn how to back squat. And it doesn't mean your muscles are necessarily tired. I could have put you through a bunch of junk. Still, you're like, I can't do this now. I'm so dead. Mentally, you're just dead. So again, you've generated this different level of fatigue, not necessarily the muscular fatigue, but almost like the systemic fatigue. That's just going to be like, I can't do this, right? This neurological taxation, okay? Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that kind of happened to me on my leg day, because Chris finishes me on my quad day with like, it was like supposed to be 75 walking lunges times two or whatever. And I'm doing no weight, you know, and I'm just doing walking lunges. But I mean, I just did as many as I could. And I think it was like, I can't even remember, but I was so wrecked. I could barely walk, you know.
And Jimmy thinks I'm bad when I say do 40. Thanks for making
me. Yeah. It was so many. It was so many. I'm like, is this per leg or is this total or what is this?
And he's like, yes.
Yeah, Steve's famous for that finisher, a 6x10, and then he writes on each leg, and you're like, mother effer.
Mother.
So I was gonna say one thing I wanted to add to that, Steve. I think you would make a great point. Like, the way I know if I'm gonna push or not, like in that first working set or just push the movement, is like, is this a skill acquisition movement for me, or is this a hypertrophy let's go movement? And like you and I, my back squat and front squat, those have been skill acquisition. We know, like, so I know it's all been percentage work, and like, could I do one more? Sure, but like, it's really about control, stability, and like getting confidence in that movement. But incline dumbbell curl, you're like, get 8, and you're like, all right, well, I got 12, so now we got to go up and wait. I got 11, right? So like, that's how I frame it. And like, if I can push a hypertrophy movement, like, that's where I go.
Love it, man. Like, this is what I was talking about, guys, when I was talking about like earlier, like the form, stability, mobility. This is the whole point. So we'll categorize exercises for you. You might not know it, but that's what we're doing when we're saying we're putting this exercise first. And like, there's also an inherent amount of fatigue that comes from internal stability demanding exercises like a back squat or front squat or deadlift or bent over row that will just fatigue you, because there's a higher level of neurological connectivity to the motion, right? There is, like, when you're doing, tell me that's not true. You do a Bulgarian split squat versus single leg press, which is worse, right? We all know the answer. We don't have to say it. We can just nod our heads and cry, right? So when we know that, then it comes down to being like, okay, so how do we select exercises so that we can get both, right? And you might actually, people don't like this answer, but it's actually often better to use machines for output. Why not, right? You guys look at Phil Heath. Phil Heath was a Mr. Olympia many times in a row, famous for being machines. Nothing's wrong with them. Ben has gotten some of the world's best quads by being famous, by bringing intensity to the hack squat. Same with Dorian Yates. Right? Why? Because they lend you stability. So your brain is like, oh, I don't have to stabilize my spine so much through air and holding that and generating this massive amount of fatigue. It can just go and like use quads. That's all it is. Right? And that's why the Bulgarian split squat sucks, because there's so many things that go on. Here's a cool little way to prove this to you guys. Okay. next time you're doing something like an incline bar or incline dumbbell curl, something bilateral, incline dumbbell curl or a low cable curl where you're doing both arms, when you fail and can't do both arms, like you guys are like, and you're doing both arms, when you fail, don't drop it and just let go both, let bring both arms back down and then do one. And you'll be like, what? And you'll almost have a double take. Like you'll look at your arms and like, what? Why can I still do one? And it's because you realize in that moment that your brain was actually the thing that was stopping it was down regulating contractile ability to the muscles because of the perceived exertion rate of the muscles. It wasn't actually, they weren't tired. Like there's some fatigue, but they weren't as tired as you think. It's just in the brain, there was too much stimulation overload. And if you guys have been on the calls in the last month, Ben's talked about that. Like stimulation overload goes through the roof. And then what happens is like, you can't do it anymore. So we classify that as task failure. You are failing, but you're not failing at the muscle level. Because if you did, you wouldn't be able to do another rep, right? So what do? Make the motion either simpler or more externally stabilized, and therefore you can output. Make sense? Try that though. Try that in your next training session, then you'll literally look at yourself and like, wow, that's cool.
That is good suggestion, because I feel that. I feel it in my brain where it's like my brain is tired.
Yeah.
But, of the push. But my muscles probably had something left.
They do. And so we need to look at a lot of this stuff like it's a process thing. That's how I was saying the earlier analogy about how like you put the gas down in a car, what happens? It roars at you because it's an engine. That's what it's going to do. So this happens everywhere, right? What happens to the muscles is they get angry. And then the more complicated things we do, what happens? Again, we get tired. That's how humans work. It's not a personal thing. Nobody's bad for it. Right? This is what happens. So if you're doing a lot of back squats, you're gonna get tired. But like, I don't even know if there's a single, including myself, I'm not sure if there's a single talented squatter on this call who could make their quads scream at them. Seriously, I'm not even sure if that exists. Like shy of a guy like Ben, seriously, I'm not even, and then on top of that too, biomechanically having the right femur length, the torso length, to actually squat to the point where your lower back or your aerobic system doesn't kick out before your quads do. I don't even know if there's a guy here, right? And then we can
know. Yeah, because it's always the finishers to get my quads. It's right. Always the finishers.
Yeah, man. And you can tell, same analogy. You can go from a squat and you can say, hey, squat and then jump into a leg extension. Can you do leg extensions? Yes. So therefore, it wasn't your quads that were failing. It was something else, right? And that's how we know that we're getting stimulating reps or something else. Does that mean that squats are not useful? No, absolutely not. They're very useful. But what are they going to get you good at? Squatting. Oh, it's like, oh, that's kind of funny. We get the result we were setting out for. So that's why we need to let go of those preconceptions like Keith wrote down earlier, right? So a couple other things for you guys to consider. Because a lot of people, and this is just more my experience, and kind of just rant them off. Now I'm going to gunfire them at you, because we're running out short on the time, is like longer break times actually could be more beneficial for trying to create more stimulating reps. Because what did I say? You dig into those high threshold motor units, it creates a lot of taxation. You're really fatiguing those muscle fibers. So what's happening? You need time. Okay. So this could be one of the reasons why your coach has supersets, stuff like that. Like do your chest, then go do some biceps, right? Because you're creating time artificially, right? Between the sets of chest, so you're able to recover. Make sense? But it also could be one of the reasons why your coach is trying to tell you you need to not think about going crazy, because some people have been conditioned, and it's not no fault of theirs, it's what happens in this world, to think that we're in the weight room to burn calories. And we're absolutely not in there to burn calories. If you want to burn calories, guys, I'm going to tell you this definitively. And if the coaches disagree with, they'll tell me off, but I'm going to stand by this as if I'm being held by gunpoint. If you want to burn calories, get on an echo bike. That's the best way to burn calories. Just get on an echo bike and just hand your soul to it, because it will burn more calories than anything you're going to do in the weight room.
Is that the fan bike?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. That thing sucks.
Exactly. It's just there to burn calories, man. That's why it's there. So we need to stop thinking weight training is about burning calories. Weight training is about getting stimulating reps so that you can build muscle, so that we can get benefits outside of the session. Make sense? So we can all nod collectively, yes, I will no longer think about burning calories in the session. So another thing to think about, how do you know if you're getting these stimulating reps that are sounding so like we're putting them on a pedestal? Contractile speed, right? Film your sets, not even for us sometimes, but for yourself. I can't tell you how valuable that's been for me to tell some clients when they're having a hard time trying to get better at exercise. I'm like, literally film your set. And then they'll watch it back, and every single rep is the same, but not in a good way. I wasn't talking about form. Their form is great, but they didn't slow down. And it's like, you didn't slow down, but you stopped. Why'd you stop? There should have been some level of fatigue. If you generate some level of fatigue, you shouldn't be able to contract as fast. That's going to slow down. Like, you're going to grunt through it, right? You ever seen somebody struggle in a hack squat? Like, you see their soul kind of like leave them. Like, have you guys ever seen the Avengers? When the Thor or Hulk gets his soul knocked out of him from, it's like that. Like, you see it kind of floating away from you. And it's like, oh, this is going to suck for 2 seconds. That's the whole point, right? But this is a second point I want to make here too. We don't want to actually intentionally slow down the contraction speed. Doing that, make a note of this, guys, intentionally slowing down the contraction speed will downregulate muscle or motor unit recruitment. Okay. Now, does that mean that we're wrong for telling you that? No, we're doing it for skill acquisition. Okay. Because if you can't move well, you can't contract properly. You can't build those muscles like you think. So if you need to learn how to move well, that is the first thing we need to establish so that you can then get the results you want. Does that make sense, guys? Okay. And then the last thing I want to say is exercise selection, right? Exercise selection is a big part here, because no matter how much you try, and this is already mentioned, no matter how much you try, like, if you're never going to get stimulating reps if the exercise itself is a bad selection for you in that result, in that goal. I'm sure you guys have heard Ben talk about, like, you know, sternal angles and pecs, right? If you guys actually just put your arms out here, retract your scapula, put your arms out, and you'll flex your pecs, and then just do this simple little thing, just raise your arms and then drop your arms, and then pay attention to how your pecs flex. And you might notice, like, oh, I lose it. Ooh, there they are. And you'll notice a certain spot where they just feel good, right? You notice that? You guys feel that? Right? You literally feel where they're the best. You're like, ooh, right there. Oh, I kind of lose it here. Oh, it's right here. And so if you actually look at Ben's talked about how bench press, that's flat press, is a great motion for him. You ever seen how Ben stands? Ben's like this. His chest is in the air and he doesn't even know it, because his sternum is up, right? So, like, that's how certain people are. And other people who might have, like, a different sternum, like down like this, they're probably going to have to do decline, right? But this is all just scapulation. So, like, for me, it's just like, hey, can we get the right exercise on the person so they can grow the muscle? If they can't, they're going to be like, this like hurts my arms, and then just develop tendonitis. And then no matter how much we talk about all the other things, they're never growing the muscle because they can't actually move properly in the exercise. Does this make sense, guys? Right? So it's kind of funny because we've all been there. We've all probably experienced every single thing I've said tonight. I know, being at a corporate gym for most of my professional career, like, this is one of the things I saw. Like, you talk to some guys who were doing exercises, and, you know, you get the famous line, oh, I just do this because this works for me. And then you'd ask them, like, what do you mean works for you? And the only answer is it's what they've done. And so they'll continue to do it, right? And, like, I remember one time I trained this one guy who's actually the husband of one of my clients a long time ago. And he'd done leg press for forever. The way he'd done leg press. And so I made him change his form, made him go slow through the eccentrics and then power up. And he couldn't walk for, I think it was like a legitimate 3 weeks. And I didn't even intend to get him sore. That wasn't my goal. I just wanted to show him how to use the leg press. But because I actually made him not just throw it around with like 12 plates aside on it, he actually had to contract his muscle against this. Yeah, it matters. So this is kind of like a kind of a good consideration. I hope you guys had a couple of aha moments. Believe it or not, I still had double of what I was going to say to you guys tonight. So I could probably rant about this for like 5 hours. If you ever want to rant about it, just drop me a message on Instagram and I will chat about this kind of stuff, because I think this is the coolest thing. My takeaways for you guys, if you were to take anything away from the call, would be that, first off, hypertrophy only matters if you've stacked your deck, okay? Stack your deck, meaning in and out of the gym, okay? Outside of the gym. If you're doing all this stuff just, you know, and you're not sleeping, you're a negative Nancy, you don't do any cardio ever, like, your cardio and aerobic system is crap, you don't manage your stress, like, you just get a negative Nancy and you're just pissed off all the time, your diet is Cheetos and chicken wings, your overall movement, just the daily movement in terms of, like, you just sit on the couch all day and, like, you just are in a bad mental state, I don't care, it doesn't matter what you do, you're not getting results. I'm telling you that right now, not gonna happen. Okay, so manage that, because you can have 1 hour in the gym or 23 out. What do you think matters more? Right? It's going to be connected. That's how it works. Okay. Second thing, takeaway, prioritize your ability of creating stimulating reps. Okay. Hypertrophy is not just something that happens because we lift in this optimal zone that we heard an influencer say one day. Okay. 8 reps is not optimal for chest. 15 is not optimal for legs. What's optimal is what can you get proper taxation of the muscle within the environment that you've created. That's optimal. Okay. And that's going to be different from person to person and exercise to exercise and everything. There's a lot of variables that we're always working with you guys on. Okay. Prioritize cardio, zone 2. It is not there in your programs for weight loss. It's there for either management of movement or trying to increase your aerobic threshold and actually therefore your cardio systems that will govern recovery. Okay. Another thing, your ability to create stimuli in your reps will ultimately rely on, again, once the deck is stacked, it's ultimately rely on your ability to push yourself. Okay. It will come down to that. That's why there will be people who will win, people who will lose. That has never not been the case, right? There's only one winner in the 100 meter dash, right? That's because he pushes himself. So it's going to be the same. If you want to win, you've got to push yourself once your deck is stacked. So stack your deck and push yourself. And the last thing, when you're stacking your deck, actively look for things that are bottlenecks that will impede your ability to perform, okay? And that will be to revisit the first things I said, which were like, you know, form, stability, mobility, exercise selection, aerobic threshold, mental toughness, and your goal. Because if you don't have a goal, even that is important, right? If you guys don't have a goal, if you're not regularly visiting it, you're probably not going to make the progress you want because you won't know why you're there, okay? Was there anything that I said tonight that you guys would like me to talk about more in another call? Or it was pretty good today and you guys are happy and we got to talk about some bro stuff? Thumbs up.
It was all good. And if you talked about it for another 5 hours, I'd listen. So
love it, man. Then we're going to have a coffee over it sometime because I will talk about it another 5 hours. If you guys do like this though, by the way, please, he's boring, but Chris Beardsley is coming out with research on this kind of stuff like all the time. He's like talking to an old like cassette. So you will be bored, but it's very interesting if you can bear it. But yeah, man, this stuff is super, super cool because it gives context, right? But what I just thought was the coolest thing, again, the nerd moment for me was when it started proving the anecdotal stuff very correct, which is that you got to work hard, right? That's the ultimate takeaway from everything. But working hard should be maybe governed within a set of criteria that we need to make sure we're at holding. Otherwise, it doesn't really make much sense, right? We turn into the 4-year-old who is running down the soccer field scoring on his net, but he's the fastest runner. Right? And we don't want to be that kid. Okay, guys. Thank you, Antonio. Love it, man. Hope you guys got some value from this. Again, just to revisit the first thing. Don't forget, if you want to, if you're having some interest in the Marbella Warrior Monk Retreat, go visit the website. I'm sure you've gotten the link sent to you. It's probably in the MI Telegram chat. And yeah, guys, I hope that I was of value. I hope you liked listening to me chat today because I like talking about this kind of stuff. And I'm hoping I can do it again with you guys soon.
Thank you.
Go have a good night, guys. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks.